or 800-711-7851.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel D.I.s. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
This is a journey.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. This is the part where I say he's a Ton Thomas and I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. We are the place where sports and politics collide. We are the place that we're trying to change the world. And frankly, this city, this militarized city, one broadcast at a time. Feeling good, feeling hopeful, because the alternative is not. And we're not going to do that on this show. Always happy to be joined. No Chuck Modiano this week. I know people are probably just crying in their cereal right now. But you do have myself. You do have Aton Thomas, the 11-year NBA vet, the person who's written more books than Moses Malone had rebounds. Aton Thomas, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. Hey, real quick, can we give a shout out to who made the soundtrack for our show? I get a lot of compliments on it, and we I don't think we ever really shouted them out. Let's give him props, because a lot of people enjoy it and they like it.
Oh, Bobby. Bobby's the absolute best. Tacoma Park's own. He does such amazing stuff with our local radio station here. Is it Bobby Hill? I just call him Bobby. I didn't say his last name. My bad. Bobby Hill, just a longtime friend and compatriot of WPFW, and an amazing person who does also the community radio here in Tacoma Park. Big shout out to Bobby Hill. I'm glad you said that, Aton. It's been way too long since we've given Bobby the collision salute, which yes, we absolutely should.
Shout out to Bobby.
Yeah. Well, we got so much to talk about this week. It's on, obviously, a remarkably poisonously stupid world in our politics. Today, Donald Trump announced this morning that he wants a full investigation into the United Nations because he couldn't walk up the escalator and there were problems with his teleprompter. The same week that he said that mothers are basically at fault for autism, for taking Tylenol, which is frankly one of the most disgusting things I've heard a person in office say in my lifetime. He said, mothers, you better get tougher. And while promoting the kind of debunked science that has the rest of the world like with their jaws on the floor. It's just embarrassing to be in this country sometimes with this leadership, if not outright humiliating. We also, though, Stephen A. Smith, political aspirations, you know, we got to talk about that. Angel Reese with the fastest selling shoe, Indiana without Caitlin Clark, looking like they might be able to run the table in a very tough WNBA. So much to discuss, Etan. I might even be leaving some things out that we discussed. I just said WNBA playoffs. We got so much. My head, it's like there's ginger ale fizzing between my ears, man.
We have a lot, but I want to ask you about an article that you wrote in The Nation and
please.
Your trip to Ireland. The article is titled "The NFL is Trump's America and it's invading Ireland." And it was an amazing article.
Thank you.
Why don't you just tell all our listeners about your trip and what you saw?
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that, because I wanted to put my foot in that article for the simple reason that being over there, frankly, just greatly moved me. We're at a point right now where there's a UN-recognized genocide taking place in Gaza. The UN has put that stamp on it after all these many, 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 many months, the things that the students been saying in the streets that this could happen, really from the first week. And finally, the UN is like, yeah, there's a genocide. I'm not going to say better late than never, but I am going to say that it is actually very important for the UN to take that step. So as all this is happening, I'm in Dublin, the most pro-Palestinian city I've ever seen in my entire life in terms of flags, in terms of solidarity and all the rest of it. And so while all this is happening in Dublin, like this real tumult around Palestine, and people might know there's even like general strikes happening in Italy to stop the genocide. Like things are thick over there right now. People are just done with this. And I don't think people in this country even realize the degree to which that's the case. But that's not why I'm over there. I'm over there because the Minnesota Vikings are going to be playing the Pittsburgh Steelers in Dublin this Sunday. I'm sure people might have seen commercials about it. And I'm going to start with my message when I came over there is I just went straight up over there and I said, they say the NFL, I mean, football is America. That's their slogan. And I agree with that slogan. I do think football is America. I also think America is a very, very, very damaged place right now. And people in Ireland need to understand that they are getting the 2025 version of America in their country. And they have to understand that's not just about beers and good times. You know, they are extracting a cost for coming over there. I said to the folks, they're not coming here to plant a tree. They are coming to plant a flag. I also said to them, if you are upset in any way, shape, or form about the Donald Trump agenda, and believe me, he is not the most popular man in Ireland, then you have to understand that the NFL is not a bystander to what's happening in this country, but an actual aggravator of what's going on in this country. And those were the talks I gave. And I spoke chapter and verse about, you know, the 9-to-1 ratio that we know about of funding to Donald Trump and the GOP right now, that NFL owners, the reverence they showed for Charlie Kirk after his passing, 2/3 of the stadiums having moments of silence in those stadiums. I had one of the people at Ton, I'm not going to mention his name because he asked me not to, but somebody you and I both know who played in the NFL during the Kaepernick period of 2016-2020. And I want to tell you how he received it, what with the Charlie Kirk memorializations. He said, it's not just about the fact that these owners are super right-wing and they want their fans to know it, and they want to, you know, he didn't use these words, but this is what I say, like coerce mourning among the 80,000 people in attendance.
Right.
Although in New Orleans, people actually booed. I gotta put that out there.
Yeah.
Some people were like, wait, I have to pay tribute. I mean, you know, all political violence is awful. This is very bad to have anybody political killed, because we all know where the repercussions fall. You know, a white dude in rural Utah kills someone, it falls on Black America, it falls on immigrants. You know, they're not sending the troops. They're not sending the troops into Orem, Utah. It's on.
Not at all.
They are not. But then, you know, that's always the side conversation. It's right. Like, it's a whole separate conversation on that front. But I said to them, the former NFL player with whom I spoke said to me that he and some other folks he'd been texting with also took it as a huge middle finger to them. Mm-hmm. And to that whole era of them saying that Black lives, Black minds, Black intelligence, Black football intelligence, as in hire us, please, after we retire, all of that matters. And they took that as the owners saying, well, actually, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. This is what matters. And, you know, and you had players, you know, basically, you know, these young players, very few, if any, very few were around. I mean, the league, the turnover is so great that Colin Kaepernick at this point, I mean, is a ghost story to players. Like, you better stay in line or you're out of here. Yeah. So that also, first of all, did not sit well with the Irish people. But I was saying to them, that's what they're bringing over here right now. Right. And just one last point about it, if I could. Mm-hmm. Sure. I know I've been filibustering on this, and I apologize.
This is your article. You got to explain.
I do. You're right. I have to explain, because it is a little bit complicated in this regard too. It is no coincidence that it's the Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Minnesota Vikings, and it is highly intentional that they are playing in a very specific stadium in Dublin, called Croke Park. I know that for people listening are like, what the heck's a Croke Park? And frankly, I think they're asking that question because before I got there, I was like, what the heck's a Croke Park? Mm-hmm. You know, but let me explain this. So first I'm going to start with Croke Park and then tell you why the Steelers and the Vikings are so intentional in terms of the teams. Like the Vikings, they have some big connection to Ireland. I mean, we're going to get there. So Croke Park, first of all, there are several stadiums in Dublin that could do an NFL game. Heck, they've had NFL games at the main stadium, which is called Aviva, before. This is the first time they've been in Croke Park.
Okay.
Croke Park, it stands for the Gaelic. That's the sort of ethnicity that they call themselves in Ireland. The Gaelic Athletic Association owns Croke Park. No individual owns it. It's this association, and this association's been around for over 100 years, and its mission for Croke Park, as Croke Park has been open for over 100 years, has always been, this is the place where we're going to preserve indigenous Irish sports. Like, there are sports, hurley, camogie, they're called, that are straight up just Irish. Okay. Obviously, they love soccer. Straight up just Irish is for the GAA-owned Croke Park. Also, Croke Park was the site of something called Bloody Sunday in 1920, where the British went in and just shot up people in the crowd.
Okay.
And that's of course connected to why Ireland and Palestine have always had this iron connection for decades, because it's the common experience of a colonialized people. And that's another thing I think is sometimes tough for people in the United States to understand, especially with the legacy of colored racism in the United States, of colorism in the United States. Like, people, I think, don't quite get that, like, for decades and decades before the peace accords of the late 90s, if you're Catholic and you're in the wrong neighborhood, I mean, you know, you might as well be Fannie Lou Hamer walking the streets in Jim Crow Alabama.
Oh, really?
Yeah. White Catholic dude. You're on the wrong street. People are just running at you. See, you know, frankly, hitting you until you'd say what religion you are. Like real sectarian, wild stuff.
Wow.
They would racialize the Catholic religion. to the point of which there was a repression that would be very familiar to people. And that's why the Palestinian question and the Irish question have always been so tight. Now, that's important for this whole thing, I swear. So Croke Park has this incredible history, and the NFL, that's straight up Irish nationalist. Like, this is us against the world with Palestine, Croke Park. And the NFL coming there and planting that flag in Croke Park, huge deal for people in Ireland, because the NFL is seen as so aggressively American. And only until a couple of years ago did they loosen the rules to say, okay, we can have sports other than Irish sports in Croke Park because it's just too much money. You know, their argument's not a bad one, frankly. They're like, you get some big Western sports in here, all of a sudden we're funding all these Irish amateur initiatives with all this extra cash. But as we both know, Eitan, there is such a thing as the deal with the devil. You know what I'm saying? Definitely. And so, yeah, we know that that's a real thing. We've read our Bible. So they're coming in to plant that flag in Croke Park. It's a symbol of just sort of being like, yeah, what's up now, Ireland? NFL has arrived. Like putting that American flag on the moon. This is ours now. Colonization, it's back. And so the NFL playing, I'm just telling you how people are reading it. Right. Like, they're not playing in the other stadium. Why? Why is it so important? Do they even know the significance of Croke Park? And then that, like, people like myself who had no idea before I showed up there and started talking to people. Here's where we get to the Steelers-Vikings question. And right now our listeners are like, will this man ever stop talking so I can hear Eitan Thomas? But we're down the road, though, Eitan. I got to finish the journey.
Right.
So the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers is a man named Dan Rooney. Dan Rooney, the Rooney family used to be hardcore Republican. They switched when Dan Rooney was named to be the ambassador to Ireland under President Barack Obama.
Okay.
So Dan Rooney was the ambassador to Ireland. I Googled Dan Rooney, Croke Park, and there are so many instances of Dan Rooney being in Ireland, doing the ambassador thing at Croke Park, talking to people about Croke Park. I assume negotiating an NFL presence in Croke Park. So the first thing to say is Dan Rooney knows exactly what they're doing by growing. He is very well versed in what Croke Park is.
Not a coincidence.
That's the first thing, is that people got to know. This isn't me like doing galaxy brain stuff in my basement. Like people can Google themselves. He knows what Croke Park is. That's the first thing. The second non-coincidence is the Minnesota Vikings, who are owned by a man named Mark Wolf, W-I-L-F. And people can very, very much and very easily, if they want to, Google Mark Wolf if they want to see what I'm talking about. I want to get the name right. So that's why Mark Wolf is the chairman of the board, in addition to owning the Vikings, of an organization called the Jewish Agency for Israel. Now, the Jewish Agency for Israel, you look them up, you research them, their mission, their reason for being, their raison d'etre is a Jewish majority in Israel. That's their thing. Keep a Jewish majority. Now, how do you keep a Jewish majority? That's a very nice way of saying more immigration. They're big on getting people to move there. More settlements, because they need a place to live. And then displacement. They've said historically they're for a two-state solution. And yet, they're not saying a thing about the fact that the whole concept of a two-state solution now has been utterly destroyed. Right. Because there's effectively no Gaza left to have a functioning Palestinian society.
Right.
So, gee, they're so committed to the two-state solution, they don't say anything when one of the states gets destroyed. And there's obviously a ton, like a lot of very weird, racialized stuff in saying majority, we've heard that language in the U.S., you know, demographic majorities, white birth rates, all of these things you can graft onto what he's doing. Now, to have Mark Wolf, of all people, be representing the NFL in the most pro-Palestinian city outside of the Middle East on Earth, let's just call it Europe or Western Europe or the Western world, whatever euphemism we want to do. Right. Like the most white folks who are pro-Palestine. We can just say it like that. Like Mark Wolf going there is a move of extreme intentionality. And it's happening at a time, and I'll just end with this, where a different kind of Irish nationalism is growing right now. That's not the Irish nationalism that I grew up with. That's like pro-Palestine, free Mandela. Not that. It's a different kind of nationalism that's like, we love Ireland, therefore keep the immigrants out. We love Ireland, therefore let's keep the brown people out. We love, you know, the stuff you hear here when you hear about nationalism. The same kind of nationalism that's infecting every country in Europe. A person people might know is Conor McGregor, the UFC guy, who is very much at the forefront of, you know, cussing out the immigrants and being like Ireland for the Irish and that kind of stuff. To such a point, Eitan, that like when you go to the British parts of Northern Ireland, and that's the part that has always been the stuff I was describing before, like the racists, the equivalent to the white South Afrikaners back in the day, you see Israeli flags there now.
Oh, really?
And people said to me, I have never, as horrible as these neighborhoods in the north are, as racist as they are, as royalist as they are, I have never seen Israeli flags up there until after October 7th. So that's interesting too. Like you have this very concentrated reactionary nationalism that's actually pro-Israeli in Ireland. And now you have Mark Wolf, somebody who is an underwriter of that stuff,
right?
Who's going to be treated like a hero in Dublin. And that's why also there's going to be protests out front, people handing out Palestinian flags when they come into the stadium. I mean, the networks won't show that, obviously, but that's happening as well. So that's the long, long, long story, Eitan, and I apologize for going on so long, but people have to understand that Ireland is a battleground like anywhere else, but say, unlike other countries, at least the people in Ireland, you know, got their fists up.
Wow. I mean, and this is going to continue in other places for political reasons that the NFL is going to try to extend to. Do you foresee that happening kind of in the near future?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. London, which they've been going to for years, is going to be the following week. So they're going to do Ireland and London back to back. And that's another thing that's very significant for people in Ireland, because they don't view London as like their European equals. They view them as their oppressors. So going Ireland, London back to back is its own kind of like people looking cross-eyed at them. But yeah, they were in Sao Paulo, Brazil earlier this year. Basically, in a nutshell, unlike basketball, as you well know, unlike baseball, the NFL, American football, if you will, is just not a global sport. It's just not, you know, like when did, here's an example. When did the NBA start seeing the African continent as an incredible place where there would be basketball players? They saw it because people on the African continent just decided to hoop. And they were like, whoa, we should invest in this. There's some hoopers here. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting.
And yet the NFL, it's not like they're like, whoa, there's a quarterback in Dublin. We should invest in there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it is.
No, it's much more like a plane landing. And then, you know, they've given out hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of flag football kits to the schools there. That are, and I was at a school literally doing a thing with the kids with Kimoji when I was there. A very fun game, by the way, with a stick. It's like baseball. It was very fun. I was out there And like, imagine like fate, like baseball plus soccer. It's pretty crazy. So while I'm there, they got a massive package from the NFL.
Okay.
At this school. And it's like, whoa, what is this? And it's like branded NFL. Everything in it is branded NFL. Mm-hmm. And because they're worried about their profit margins, Eitan, they might be the biggest sport in the U.S., but they look at that Adam Silver China money, mm-hmm. and they're just like, or that Major League Baseball Japan money, right. and they're just like, where's our piece? So they're trying to expand globally, although it's, I don't think it's going to work other than like these one-off fun games.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you foresee the NFL scheduling a game in Israel?
Oh.
Because wow. I can see that happening if they're going that route. I can see maybe, you know, I mean, here in the near future, do you see them possibly scheduling a game actually in Israel?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I have zero intelligence to think that that's the case. But mm-hmm. you and I both know that people like Bob Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, who, you know, he was married in Israel, like whose connections there are very strong. He started the organization Stop Anti-Semitism, which is I would argue a virulently anti-Palestinian organization that exists under the guise of we have to end the hate. And there was a commercial, they sort of rebranded as Stop Hate for the Super Bowl ads. You remember those with Tom Brady and our good friend Snoop Dogg going back to back? And
right.
Yeah, because no, you know, it's so upsetting to watch that commercial and be like, Tom Brady might have the best politics in this commercial. It's really a bummer, man. It's such a bummer because I do not like Tom Brady.
You said that a few times.
Like Snoop keeps going back to the well now too. So that's my Bob. So the idea of Bob Kraft trying to engineer that, of course, the idea of Mark Wolf wanting to see that happen, of course. So I see it as something extremely probable. I actually wonder if Israel has Tel Aviv, the kind of stadium that could outfit it correctly. But then you look at, I don't know, a lot of these stadiums, I think, are injury prone for these players because I don't think they really care. I've heard stories about like the stadium in Mexico, for example, Mexico City, and players being like, I'm not sure this is safe for my ankles, my knees, the cleats, and the owners sort of being like, bleep you.
Yeah, but could you also see, and of course this is just all hypothetical, but could you also see them getting the stadium in Israel kind of NFL ready for them to do that, at least to play a game there at the bare minimum?
Because I kind of don't know.
That's just my opinion. I don't put it past them to go that route if they really want to make that statement, and it will be a statement. But if they say, okay, well, just to ensure, you know, all the players, we're going to send our teams there and send a memo to all the NFL teams and saying we're going to make sure that the conditions are, you know, up to standard of NFL standards. So you don't have to worry about that part of it, you know, to try to smooth it out and kind of, you know, kind of squash that concern from NFL players. I'm like I said, I'm just speculating.
It's so tough because I got to go somewhere else. I can't go totally there with you. I can go with you to there are individual owners who would, you know, walk the face of the earth to make that happen. That I'm with you. I also don't want to undersell the degree to which the NFL is not just this kind of right-wing organization, you know, in terms of the politics they support, but they also are very much a finger-in-the-wind organization. Like, we don't want to step into something overly controversial if we don't have to. Clearly, the Charlie Kirk stuff gives lie to that idea, or at least challenges that, because there was nothing popular about them doing that. But they know that, and these polls actually just came out yesterday, Eitan, that support for Israel in the United States has never been lower, ever. Support for Israel among Democrats is now very much in the minority in terms of like support. And this part's really important, support for Israel among Jews, particularly Jews under the age of 30, who the NFL is desperately trying to attract, the under 30 crowd, because they're the weakest of their demographic support. That's subterranean too. So I really wonder if at least in the near term, they would want to step in this particular briar patch. That's my suspicion.
Ooh, okay, that's a lot. I have to say that I can see them doing it, to be honest with you. I can see it, and you know, I wouldn't put it past them. But
that's a very reasonable position. That's right. A very reasonable position. Yeah. I guess what I'm doing more than anything else is putting forward the counterfactual, if you will, that they also really care about that money, and they really try to avert controversy where they can.
I got you. Well, we're at the bottom of the hour. We have our guests waiting for us. And I want to ask him so much. I want to ask him about Stephen A. Smith's new love for politics. You know, I want to ask him at some of the Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett has been receiving a lot of backlash, especially from Laura Loomer, which is very interesting. And I want to ask him about Hakeem Jeffries, because I have questions. You know what I mean? He's been very pro-Israel before. You know, Chuck always, if I said that, Chuck would probably go off on Lord Casket about his statement where he said, Israel now, Israel forever. That really is a button for Chuck, but yeah, that's what he did. And now there's questions on what he voted for in terms of, you know, Charlie Cook's, Kirk's, whatever they wanted to do for him. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our guests with more on The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
Well, on that note, I do want to turn to something that you heard the senator just say, which is he was talking about a resolution that came before the House this past week honoring Charlie Kirk. And there were 58 Democrats who voted against it. You were one.
Yeah.
Why?
Absolutely. You know what? One of the things I do want to point out that's not been laid out that honestly hurts my heart is when I saw the no votes, there were only two Caucasians. For the most part, the only people that voted no were people of color, because the rhetoric that Charlie Kirk continuously put out there was rhetoric that specifically targeted people of color. And so it is unfortunate that even our colleagues could not see how harmful his rhetoric was specifically to us. And I can tell you that a month prior to him passing away, he had actually gotten out on his podcast. I wasn't aware of this at the time, but he got out there and he was talking negatively about me directly. So if there was any way that I was going to honor somebody who decided that they were just going to negatively talk about me and proclaim that I was somehow involved in the great white replacement, yeah, I'm not honoring that kind of stuff, especially as a civil rights attorney and understanding how I got to Congress, knowing that there were people that died, people that were willing to die, that worked to make sure that voices like mine could exist in this place. So to me, just like we wanted to make sure that those Confederate relics were taken down, the idea of a new age relic being propped up was something that I just could not subscribe to. And it is unfortunate that more of my colleagues, even on my side of the aisle, could not see the amount of harm that this man was attempting to inflict upon our communities.
We're back here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide. Jasmine Crockett saying something, frankly, Etan, that should not be brave, but it was.
Right.
You feel what I'm saying? Like should be commonsensical. And yet somehow she's standing against the tide by even making the point of, why am I being asked to bow my head in mourning with somebody who saw me as less than a human being? And why does the Democratic Party, except for two people, why does the white Democrats, why do they not see that? Etan, why don't you introduce our guest? We can get his thoughts on this, as well as, I think you really hit your nail on the head, Etan, Stephen A. / I'm going to be the only person to not defend Jimmy Kimmel Smith. Let's talk about them, please. Oh, yes. Please introduce our guest and then let's rock and roll.
Sure. Yes, the Young Turks. I've known him for a long time. You know, I appreciate his work. If everybody that's not familiar with his work, even though all of our audience, I'm sure, are. He does a great job covering a myriad of topics. I interviewed him for my book, Police Brutality, White Supremacy, and he pushes the envelope in a way that brings the topic to a whole different audience that is missing in mainstream America. And that's why he always has my respect and respect to everybody on WPFW. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rick Strom, how you doing, sir?
Hello, everybody. How we doing? Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, good, terrific good. To have you here, man. Tom, throw one of your spet like you just did with me. One of your softballs covered in gasoline lit on fire for Rick Strom to take a swing at.
Yeah, I mean, Jasmine Crockett, you know, Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett has been receiving a lot of backlash, and especially from Laura Loom. And she has called her such profanities, and that it's just amazing sometimes that where politics has gone to, and it shouldn't surprise us, and yet it still does. For me, you know, I mean, it's gone to a whole different place, and my kids sometimes like, is this the way politics is supposed to be? I'm like, no, nothing that you're seeing is normal and how it should be. But, you know, but talk about what Jasmine Crockett just said, you know, what you just heard as far as the vote for the Charlie Kirk, whatever that they was trying to do. The amount of people who supported it, the amount of white people in particular that supported it, and some of the backlash that she's received.
Sure. So again, appreciate you guys having me. Here's what I will say to it. She is, her dialogue with CNN in that discussion was honestly microcosmic of the reaction that we saw from the United States and a large portion of the electorate that was split largely along racial lines. Because from what I saw, whether it was Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, etc., you saw a lot of black folks saying, like, look, you don't have to mourn the guy. He came after me. He came after people that look like me. Why? I'm not celebrating it, but why should I give a damn what happened? And then a lot of, I would say, middle of the road, predominantly Caucasian, liberal, centrist creators would say, this is terrible and we need to do everything possible so this never happens again. And they really like, which is partially true, but they just really couldn't understand like the full scope and why people reacted in a strong way in the way that they did. And it's indicative of the communities that he attacked. Like, yes, he would go after, you know, liberals and he would go after trans people, but he predominantly went after black folks and Muslim people and going after Zoran Mamdani and going after the WNBA over and over and over again, going after Simone Biles, calling LeBron James low IQ, which, by the way, was my first introduction to Charlie Kirk because I had no idea who he was until like 2019. And as we know, when a white person does not have the wherewithal and understanding to really dissect how they feel about an individual and they placate to racial tropes for their audience, it's fairly obvious what you're saying. It's a complete dog whistle. Right. And as he's attacking the Civil Rights Act, right?
Yeah.
I then point to
attacking, calling for it to be abolished.
Calling for it to be abolished. Mistake. And then I'm
not
looking at this
for a tweak.
Right. Saying that it was a mistake and it shouldn't happen. And then we're talking about Jasmine Crockett, who's a literal civil rights attorney. It just can't get more glaringly obvious that her criticisms are valid. And the reaction, once again, falls by the wayside and falls completely short, predominantly from people that look like Dave and I, because they just cannot see it. They can't put themselves in another person's shoes.
Well, they're lucky if they look like me. But let me throw to you.
You are a handsome fellow, Dave, I will say.
As are you, sir. And Etan, hey, three good-looking fellas. doing some radio. There's something wrong with that equation. Why are we on the radio? But Rick, question for you on this front. I'd love to, Etan and I have discussed this often, but I would love to know your reaction when first they did the Charlie Kirk tribute on the Thursday night game for everybody. Yeah. Call, then that was the NFL's call. I made phone calls to find out the exactitude of this. So that was Goodell's call for the Thursday night.
Could you enlighten me very quickly on that reporting?
Could I what?
Could you enlighten me very quickly on your reporting there?
Yeah, I called the NFL, got the VP of communications on. And
Michael McCarthy?
Yeah, Brian McCarthy.
Brian McCarthy.
Laid it out. Plain spoken, you know, he's just like, Thursday night was the Goodell call. Sunday night, it was up to individual NFL ownership as to whether or not they would do it. So then it becomes like this litmus test.
Yes.
Like I'm at the Ravens game because I was there that Sunday for reporting purposes, but I'm also there, you know, like, you know, knowing that that's the team of my wife's family. And I'm like, please, no Charlie Kirk, please, no Charlie Kirk, please, no Charlie Kirk. And there wasn't, they didn't do it
right
at Baltimore. But what happened after that? A tiresome, might be bots in Tel Aviv, who the heck knows, harassment campaign of the people. Who work for the Ravens because they didn't do a tribute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have Steve Bisciotti's home number,
right?
Owner of the team. So it's like you go after the workers there because it's always about kicking down, yeah. Always. And this idea that feels very fascistic to me of you are not mourning enough the person we are telling you you have to mourn. Wow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's really something. Oh, and also, we will fire you if you publish things he actually said.
Right.
That's another
right.
Wow.
Right.
I've used right. This line a million times, Rick, before you, please, and by all means, then filibuster about what your thoughts are about the Kirk thing. But I've used this line a million times. I'm going to use it again. They keep comparing him, and I know this is just monstrous trolling, whatever, but they're comparing him to like MLK, whatever. You know, let's forget the stupidity of that for a second. Mm. Imagine if after MLK died, his supporters were like to the media, you better not quote him. We don't want his words out there.
Right.
You know what I'm right. saying?
Yeah, like, of course.
How dare you tell the world, he said, I may not get there with you, free at last. You know, it's like they want to punish you for quoting the man.
Right.
Because he's that, he was, I abhor all political violence. He was that messed up a human being that he said things so hateful. And it frankly, it's just really disturbing to me that Jasmine Crockett is one of the few people willing to say it out loud when everybody should be. Coerced mourning is just frankly ghastly and grotesque and obscene. But Rick, your thoughts when you saw the NFL's mourn Charlie Kirk campaign?
Oh, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious how I felt about it. It felt like we were attempting to and were using sports washing in order to whitewash a white person's reputation that said just very dangerous, violent things. I mean, if anybody were to go through, because he did podcasts, he did interviews, he went on tour, you could find anything that you want. If you were to just type in list of Charlie Kirk's racism, list of Charlie Kirk's transphobia, where he attacked Leah Thomas, list of Charlie Kirk going after women, he was basically a less athletic Harrison Butker on the subject. What really gets me about the NFL using his image is that, and it goes without saying, you know, we've all covered Colin Kaepernick, but it just needs to be stated very quickly that this was the same exact league that kicked out somebody for saying that racism is bad, the military is mistreated, and police brutality exists in the country. And he was kicked out of the league, where the Wall Street Journal even reported on a phone call that took place involving Stephen Ross, basically saying that, well, the president is very strong. He says that it uplifts me. there's really nothing that we can do. So they played by his rules. And we all know what happened there. Okay, so they set the precedent. No politics in sports. Mm-hmm. And yet what we're doing in 20-plus home stadiums, or 20 is a long shot, in half of the home stadiums, a little less than half in the National Football League, is inserting politics into sports. It just doesn't really make sense to me. But what we have covered, and what the three of us have covered, and a few others as well, is that sports is being used to carry out, as Dave said, fascistic tendencies within the administration, whether that is somebody being honored, whether that is, even for the U.S. as a whole, military flyovers, whether it is Daniel Penny, J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, and others in a skybox as they're put on the Jumbotron with a Palantir logo and read these signs that sports have always been political. They're just putting it into overdrive to carry out a certain agenda that fits them.
And let's talk specifically about this backlash that Jasmine Crockett has received, and it's been, you know, especially from Laura Loom. Let me read her comments. You know, and this was Laura Loomer's reaction was simply because Jasmine Crockett did not stand with the colleagues of color who objected to Kirk's whatever they was. What were they going to do for him? A memorialization or so? Whatever they wanted to do,
they want to build a statue. I mean, how far will they go?
Right. How far? I mean, goodness, they want to do the commemorative corn, the day, the moments of silence, the, you know, every flag and half staff, everything like that. So now they want to do a statue, and she didn't stand with that. So Laura Loomer said, you know, it hurts my heart that we have ghetto black bees who hate America serving in Congress. That was her statement. And I didn't hear enough people in Congress come to her defense, because every single person should have denounced that. Every single person, whether they're black or white, should have been running to CNN, to Roland Martin, to whoever, to denounce what was said, but it was eerily silent. But what was your reaction to hearing that?
I hate to even say this, but my instant reaction, maybe because we have become so numb as an electorate politically to see these things and this sort of rhetoric over and over again, I was completely unsurprised. I just wasn't surprised. I can't be surprised with someone who will, in video, align with Nick Fuentes, who is an avowed Nazi, and cheers him about the white race because of the election of Donald Trump. So I can't really be surprised. What I will also say, though, is that we wouldn't necessarily even be bringing up Laura Loomer right now if it wasn't for Elon Musk and his takeover of Twitter. There's a reason why these people get banned from these platforms. It's because they have a large audience. I would rather them be 4 clicks away instead of 2 clicks away from having these hateful, diabolical messages being put out. There's a reason why she was banned off Lyft, off Uber, off, I believe, maybe even Instacart as well, or Uber Eats, one of those. And there's a reason why she was banned off Twitter when Elon didn't own it. It's because of stuff like this and how she will fan the flames of bigotry within the MAGA base. So for all this talk about how Elon is, I saw an interview with Ro Khanna, and I understand he's like, he represents Silicon Valley. I believe it was on Adam Freeland's show, who's doing some pretty good interviews. The Richie Torres interview, if you haven't seen it, please go watch it. But what I noticed is that he was like, no, we should be trying to talk to Elon, and we should be trying to use him. No, you should not be using these people. Because even though he will say that he is for all the right things and he doesn't support, you know, Nazi-like behavior, he gave 2 Sieg Heils at the inauguration. He lets back on Nick Fuentes, lets back on Laura Loomer, and supports the AFD. So I'm really thinking, like, it's interesting how they talk about crackdowns of like lefties when really all that we want is like free healthcare, free college, and high speed rail. And really the crackdown should come from people like Laura Loomer because of their influence and just how hateful they are as people.
Yeah. Let's, real quick though, free healthcare, healthcare industry, billionaires making that the big roadblock to that happening. Free college. They don't want an educated populace. Mm-hmm. They actually want us ignorant and frankly stupid.
Yes.
Which and sick too, which I think is a lot of the Robert Kennedy Jr. HHS perspective. Like if you're sick, that just means you're lesser, and therefore, you know, and that's also an extremely weird eugenicist approach to things. Donald Trump telling mothers that they need to get tougher when they're pregnant, like things like rather than to take Tylenol. I mean, which is one of the most monstrous press conferences, by the way, I've ever seen. It's like, and then high speed rail, man, which is my dream too, man. Thought of getting from DC to Philly a ton in 45 minutes. Can you imagine that? I mean, they certainly can in Europe and Japan.
Totally. Yeah.
Can't imagine exactly. It here. You know, these are things that also have like just tremendously entrenched lobbies. I mean, we're just such a country awash in dark money. Yeah. And the people who run that dark money, Jane Meyer warned us this a year ago, like 10 years ago in her book about it. She's in her New Yorker articles. She said, look, it's not just that they're giving money to the right wing. It's that these people themselves are so far right wing. People just don't even have an idea who this isn't like the old days of H.L. Hunt giving money to Richard Nixon. I mean, this is next level in terms of who these people are, and they're very hyper dominionist version of the United States that they want to see.
Agreed.
Scary time. Stephen A. Smith, though, we have 3 minutes left. Rick Strom, credible presidential candidate. What do you think?
No, absolutely not. Not credible. Do you think he's credible?
No.
Okay, good.
Although this country, you know, like,
no, all bets are off. Look, I saw an interview that Bomani Jones gave to Awful Announcing probably about 6 to 8 months ago. And he's like, he's really popular. Like, I don't think we understand how popular he is because we're in the thick of it. And we understand his popularity. But outside of it, he's really, really popular. I don't buy it. I just don't. I think people will bring up the Ray Rice clip. I think people will bring up what he has, the way that he has conducted himself around Molly Kierum at times. And I think they'll also bring up how he is best friends with a lot of Republicans. Like, I just don't really buy it. I think what he really wants is Jimmy Kimmel's spot. And I think he's playing footsie with politics in order to show that he could not only get his name out, but that one hand will wash the other for him to remain relevant outside of sports, because this is probably the last big contract that he is going to get with Disney. As we know, they depend on live sports. Their entire model is built on live sports. A lot of the other shows do not perform well. First Take still does. That's indicative of his popularity, I suppose. But as I see it, presidential candidate, no. Hunting for the Kimmel spot, yes.
But I don't see him running as a Democrat, though. I mean, you said because he'd probably be, you know, say that he would show him being friends with Republicans. Those are his friends. Tucker Carlson, you know, those are his
people. And being a Mark sexist Levin. Towards Molly is actually now a plus in Trump's America. Like,
that's true.
Everything that we used to see as deficits, even the Ray Rice stuff. I mean, we're in a pretty dark place right now with regards to what's accepted in politics with regards to violence against women. I don't see that. I think he'll be looked at as mild sauce compared to this cabinet of rapists that Trump has assembled around him.
But I will say the rules are different. He still does have a black face, and the rules will be different than for him than they will be for Trump. No matter what you think about
Steven,
you will have to walk a different line than Trump. Trump can have 34 felonies and all these different things documented, Epstein files, you know, all these different connections, and still be president.
Although his popularity, it is dropping too, as people are seeing that paycheck drop. It's just the problem to me, and I know we got to wrap up the show, is that the Republican Party governs like they're never going to have to see a free and fair election again. And that to me is the bigger worry, because even that hedge of having to face the people on a national basis just feels like that's frayed, if not gone.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, Rick, we got to have you on again. The time flew too quick. Yeah, we got to have you on again. But, you know, much respect for all the stuff that you do, but we got to have you on again. Great, great episode, great commentary, but you got to come on again.
I appreciate you guys. Anytime. Thank you.
And Rick, how can people follow you on the various socials before we go?
TikTok is my name. You can see my stuff on The Young Turks, and I'm doing a lot of in-person interviews on my independent show, which is just The Rick Strom Show.
Wow, that's a pretty big ego, Rick, to say TikTok is my name.
what do you want me to spell it?
I'm just busting your beans. Everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace. Claim to be nothing but who the fuck I am. Never sold cocaine in my life, but I'm still the fucking man. Understand, nothing you did makes you better. You claim the streets, but the streets respect that cheddar. Luda got twice as much your life, you can charge it to him. I fit four of your houses inside my daughter's room, and still have room for young karma to play. Give it back to the children of tomorrow for good karma today. So you can say what you wanna say, and you can talk that talk, but real niggas ain't doing no talking, cause we walk that walk. Album for album, you can see I got a multi-million plan. So call yourself whatever you want, except the multi-million man.
Attention all parents and youth in the Washington, D.C. area. Looking for a creative, inspiring after-school program? The Word Speeds and Life Academy in Columbia Heights fall session begins September 22nd. For ages 8 to 18, we offer classes in poetry, DJing, graffiti art, college prep, and more. Elementary classes are Mondays and Tuesdays, with youth and young adults on Wednesdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m. Located at 1525 Newton Street Northwest in Columbia Heights, starting September 22nd. It's the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy. More info at WBLINC.org/academy. All right.
WPFW has offered inspiring music, poignant stories, and critical journalism for over 48 years. Whether reminiscing while hearing Nina Simone or learning about the harm done due to gross global inequity, WPFW has been the soundtrack for moments of revelation, joy, sadness, and resistance. It's your generosity that allows us to continue this tradition of expansive, emancipatory excellence in community radio. We ask you to once again be in solidarity with WPFW during our fall pledge drive by donating at WPFWFM.org and additionally from October 12th through the 25th at 800-222-9739. There is only one WPFW and only one you, the listener, who is committed to keeping independent music and message available to the people. Your generosity sustains and challenges us to build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
This is Ronald Hampton, convener of IBW's Police Justice and Accountability Task Force. Are you sick and tired of Trump's occupation of Washington, D.C. and other chocolate cities around the country? IBW is convening an emergency summit to address this urgent issue. Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1313 New York Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. Speakers include Dr. Julian Malveaux, Sonia Pruitt, Kimon Freeman, Denise Rolock Barnes, and more. That's Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Details at IBW21.org.
Appeal Incorporated presents its 8th Annual Founders Day Celebration with dinner and a show on Sunday, September 28th at 4 p.m. featuring Sahel, Anna Mulago, Bamani Armah, Kaba Soul Singer, and DJ One Love at the Thurgood Marshall Center, 1816 12th Street Northwest. Details, including how to join virtually, at appealinc.org or 800-711-7851.
United Workers of Washington, D.C., together with other organizations and friends, invite the community to celebrate the life and legacy of Arturo Griffiths, Jr. this Friday, September 26th, at All Souls Church, 1500 Harvard Street Northwest, with the service at 3, a march to Amigos Park at 4, and the repast back at All Souls 5 to 7 p.m. Arturo, an Afro-Latino who immigrated to D.C. from Panama, was a longtime community and union organizer and a freedom fighter. He started and led United Workers of D.C., Latin American Youth Center, was active in the movement for D.C. statehood, and was a member of the WPFW family. Arturo's organizing was a critical bridge between D.C.'s African-American and Latino communities. He has left an indelible mark on Washington, D.C., helping to shape the city we all share. May he rest in power and peace. Arturo Griffiths, Jr., presente.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves.